Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Obviously, our guest on the line today, we have actually two guests on the line. We've got the legendary jiu-jitsu artist, Carlos Machado, and also one of our Mile High Karate franchisees and longtime Machado student, Alan Condon from New York. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Good morning.
All right. And with Mr. Machado, a lot of things we want to talk about today. So I really appreciate you taking all this time out of your schedule to help us out and to kind of help our, you know, MMA schools, mixed martial arts schools, Brazilian jiu-jitsu schools, and even regular martial arts schools kind of get a perspective of what your system looks like and the innovations that you've brought to that part of the niche in the last few years. And I think it's some really exciting stuff. Let's give all our listeners just a little bit of a background about you. If I didn't know anything about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, tell us a little bit about your background and about you know how the sport and how the art has kind of evolved in the last few years from your perspective.
Well, I was born into it. I started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu since I was 4 years old. I took part in a tournament when I was four, like a few months after I started. And ever since, me and my brothers, we have been involved directly with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for our entire lives. In our upbringing in Brazil, we had the opportunity to compete several times. So we're fortunate that we won several titles state nationwide. And in 1990, we decided to come to the United States. And initially, it was something that we didn't anticipate would become a lifetime, decision. And at that time, we did have a contact with Mr. Chuck Norris. I did participate in a seminar in Vegas in 1988, 2 years prior to. And once we came back, we did get in touch with him again after a while. At that point when we started, we rented out the garage. We had our gym in a garage, and Mr. Norris was so passionate about martial arts that he didn't care. He just came by, trained with us, and became good friends. And still today, Chuck Norris is one of the best friends we've ever had, very special human being. And through his friendship and initiative, we're able to open our first school ever in the United States at that time in the Valley area in Los Angeles. He and Mr. Bob Wall were very instrumental because it was in a shopping mall that they both owned, and we had a very good deal to get started with. And since then, we opened a second location in Redondo Beach shortly after. And once Mr. Norris came to Texas to film his show, Walker, Texas Ranger, he still was, into jiu-jitsu a lot, and he didn't like the fact that he was in Texas now, and all the Machados were in California. Mm-hmm. So we talked on several occasions, and I finally decided, you know what, let's go and get a Machado Jiu-Jitsu Academy in Texas. And when I first came down to Texas, actually I didn't have a location of my own. My academy was inside his TV studio. Mm-hmm. So, but anyhow, this is kind of like how things took a turn and of course, like initially we were teaching in the United States. We got in touch with several celebrities and nice students, but we didn't develop until throughout the years, more of a sense of how to better assist the customers. You know, we had that idea that we had to train fighters to be world champions like us, but we didn't have to, concentrate on other areas that nowadays we know are crucial for anybody into the martial arts, which is the teaching methodology. How can you teach someone in a way that they feel, first of all, they can do it, and second, that they can come back and be a very good student, you know, in a, I would say a short amount of time, you know, and then become, I guess, a long-term martial artist in the long run as well. So what happens with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is such an intricate system. It takes so long sometimes. One of the challenges, like people when they start, how do you get a black belt? You know, I've had students in the past that you take them 10 years, you know, if not more, to become a black belt. And all that happened because we never had structure. And you said about what do I have in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu if you don't know anything about it. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, as many people see, is a major element in MMA because in addition to the striking and the takedowns from wrestling, if nowadays you don't have a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu game, I mean, you'll come a time that you'll be tested in that area, and you shouldn't be lacking knowledge in that situation if your goal is an MMA fight. As a matter of fact, if you don't, I'm not changing the subject, but Quentin Jackson, who is the current light heavyweight champion, which I'm going to meet in a few days for a clip for a reality show, he is a lot into jiu-jitsu right now, and he actually, when he fought Dan Henderson, defending his title in his last fight, one of the things that he mentioned was there was a difference in his game was the addition of more jiu-jitsu. So if you have nowadays a guy with that projection, you know, that takes the title from Chuck Liddell and has a successful defense against a guy like Dan Henderson, who is a Pride Fight champion, you know, a major fighter out there, and you can see the elements of jiu-jitsu, you know, getting into the game. Now, for the general public, you don't have to be an MMA fighter. You don't have to be an athlete. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu molds into anybody's shape and background. And as a matter of fact, most of my students are black belts or have high ranks in different styles. And that's the beauty of it. Excuse me. I believe Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu never contradicts. It always complements whatever you do. And that kind of gives me our approach, the Machados. We always had that approach, too. We're never confrontational, trying to, say, prevail over other challenges or currents of thought of martial arts by saying that our style was more or less than everybody else's. We just believed we have a good product, and we are willing to share. And when people feel that, first of all, there's no animosity, you know, or no... I mean, I love, and I'm very willing to learn. I'm always open-minded. A lot of my students, whether it's from karate, from kickboxing, and from everywhere, they taught me a lot of things that are very helpful to my martial arts knowledge, you know. And the other thing about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because it does not involve so much trauma, you do the striking in a limited way for self-defense purposes. But in the main way of training, you concentrate more on leverages and submissions and techniques and positioning. So that way it becomes very, very a good exercise. You get very fit, but your body does not carry on the bruises if you were to do a full-scale sparring. And so it's very common nowadays. I've had, and actually it's a new market that's presenting to myself that I never had a chance to evaluate before. I have a lot of older guys who are in the, I would say, 45 to 55 bracket, which is a major market because that group right there has more of an income in general than the 18 to 35, which is the bracket that we used to concentrate before. And of course, you know, I was talking to Mr. Oliver not long ago in our last conversation, which I admire a lot, his intelligence on how to market things from all his experience. And he was telling me his idea of bringing children into a karate program and then transitioning them into a jiu-jitsu program instead of trying to sell the jiu-jitsu right off the bat, for the fact that I don't think the general public, especially for the children's market, is yet that educated, possibly about the benefits of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but they already know the benefits of karate, which is established system and very successful in the kids' programs. So we had that, you know, conversation. Mr. Condon was there with me, and we talked. Anyhow, what else can I say? Interrupt me, Mr. Toby, at any time you feel like changing the course of the question, if there's
I got to tell you, that was brilliant. I think you said about 10 things in there I'd love to expand on. So let's take a breath for a second and move back to what you said initially. Let me ask you just a little bit. There was so much good stuff in there. I have like a whole sheet of notes already. What do your schools look like now? From a martial arts standpoint, you have schools in California and Texas. What does your organization look like right now?
Okay, I tell you this. I can't say for my brothers because they operate independent schools.
I see.
But they have from my understanding, they have a very big following, and in my personal case, I can tell you more. For instance, I had an epiphany last year. I was in Australia doing a seminar tour, and I had one of my students who has attended several meetings, all the way from NAPMA to all different consulting seminars. And we spent probably a month talking just about martial arts business, just about that. And when I was confronted with that knowledge, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, it's a new style compared to everything else. But the way, I guess, we were brought up in Brazil, our business sense is different. You know, we thought that things had to be in a certain way. We never, for instance, envisioned doing belt testing. You know, we thought that the student would earn a belt whenever the instructor decided that it was a time for him to get the belt. We didn't at the time, I didn't implement the bowing before and after class. I thought that was kind of like a tradition from Oriental schools, from the Japanese system. Maybe it was not applicable to the Brazilian informal way of doing things. But I started to slowly take counsel on some of those things that I saw him doing that were working for him. And I started to implement at my school. You know, we did different levels of memberships, so you have a basic level and you can get into a higher level of training, and each upgrade, of course, is an opportunity for the school to increase the revenue. So I got, I guess, introduced to that concept of the upgrades, some cash outs, you know, options and different things. And I was starting to play with it, okay? And also the marketing, doing more like a direct marketing and things like that, referral programs among my students. And my school, despite my name and everything, you know, I was like, you know, I had a little over 100 students. And I was like, still, you know, I was kind of like stuck on something. You know, like I didn't go beyond a certain point. I was on a slump, sort of. It didn't matter how much I did, how much I taught. It was always the same. And those marketing changes affect them to the point that I tripled the school size and revenue to the point where, in 1 year, see, my reference, if you ask me how I used to do before July of last year, I would tell you, like every martial artist that doesn't know how to do business, I just rely on my teaching skills and my goodwill, and the students, you know, they come and go as they please, you know. But from that point on, I've seen a big difference. I've been steady in that regard. Right now, you know, it's not that the numbers of students matter, but, you know, it's between the 250 to 300 number, you know. And I've been consistent my school has been consistent on the 40,000 range on a monthly basis. You know, sometimes oscillates a little less, a little more, but if you average, you know, and this is the big change, because before, and sure, I'll be sincere with you, I have different streams of income, you know.
Sure.
And sometimes my school wouldn't do as well 1 month, and I had to catch up by doing some extra seminars here and there, things to bring money to fill the gap, which fortunately nowadays I travel to teach when I want, not because I need, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So,
right.
But I still know that there's a lot out there for me to sharpen my skills, and I think it's a great opportunity to talk to individuals from your organization who I know have a track record on,
sure.
on that area.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Yeah, 250 to 300 students is absolutely nothing to sneeze at. $40,000 gross is certainly way above what, if there is an industry average, it's certainly way above what the industry average is. And obviously in you know, the Mile High Karate circles, you know, we've been able to have, you know, fantastic financial and student results for a really long time. And a lot of the things that you said are the component parts of making that happen. And I wanted to go back and revisit some of those things because you're a very, for the audience, if they haven't understood this already, you're a very progressive thinker. And you know, I've spoken to many of the I've spoken to a few of the Gracie clan and a few of the other preeminent very traditional jiu-jitsu schools and cross eclectic styles too, not just only jiu-jitsu, but some of the very traditional Korean styles, some of the very very hard traditional Japanese styles, some of the very traditional Chinese styles, and they typically have a very similar mindset to what you described earlier, where they rely on being a great teacher, and they think that that's the only component that they have to operate a successful business. Now, granted, that is a skill set you absolutely have to have, but it's only one of four skills you have to have, and you have to have a high competency in marketing, you have to have a high competency in motivation, and you have to have a high competency level in sales skills and persuasion skills. And what you said is very interesting about your structure, and I kind of wanted to expand on that. So what you've described is sort of the old school, even the Japanese and Korean and Chinese style, the old school style of thinking, as opposed to a modern approach to operating a business. And I think that that's very illuminating for everyone. Tell me a little bit about that. Tell me a little bit about the challenges that you had and maybe struggles that you've had in making that change in your own mind or making that change in your organization from having, you know, no belts that you have exams for, having just an instructor have an opinion about a person and the ability to advance them or not, and having basically a non-structured school to what you have now. What were some of the obstacles? What was that change like for you?
Well, as you know, there are two kind of obstacles. First, on the personal level, it's my insecurity, almost like you get into unknown territory. You know, I've
sure.
never done that before, so I was concerned that I was almost afraid, like, my gosh, what am I going to do? You know, tell my students all of a sudden now they have to pay for belt testing. They never did bowing before, and, you know, it was like, not they didn't respect me. They never called me sir. They never called me by my last name and this and that. No, implementing all these changes. But I had in mind, I had one thing in mind. I saw results. I based upon facts. I saw results with other people I knew that took place. You know, and one of my students, Mr. Pittman, Clay Pittman, was the one that actually brought me to that conclusion. And he had to go through the same things that I did. You know, he was scared to death. He didn't even tell his people all the changes he had. He told his brother, who was working with him at the time, to do it. You know, he didn't know. In our minds, we think that our students are going to disagree with us and leave us, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is not the case. You might have, you know, the ones that will give you trouble usually are the senior students, because they were the ones that were used to the old ways for so long that, you know, they might resist change. But then I explained to everybody, I said, this is for a common good, you know. And so we started with the bowing and explained why. I said, this is an atmosphere of respect. Respect brings harmony, and harmony brings success. That's all we're here about, to have a group, and you have to respect each other and the instructor, and you have to show it. And then they started to bow. And I said, belt testing is time that it takes for an instructor. I have to go there and give you a syllabus, which I do. You know, I structured the training in a way that I break down the techniques. Every 24 lessons, you're ready for a test, which takes about 3 months in the way I do it. So on every quarter, My students, you know, get tested and they advance in stripes. We use five bell ranks of the jiu-jitsu: white, blue, purple, brown, and black. And they started to do it, and they actually started to like it. You know, I put all of them in a testing day, you know, 40 people doing the test at the same time, all divided in different groups depending on their ranks. And lo and behold, they brought their friends, they brought their moms, their, you know, their sons or whoever. It was like a, it was a win-win for everybody, because who doesn't like to be acknowledged, you know?
Right.
And that was an opportunity for me to let everybody else know, hey, this guy is doing good. So what better way to do it than showing in an occasion where other people could share with, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, just to expand on that topic too, and I know that I don't want our listeners to miss this because it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
What you said, two things that are very important. You said you have a very systemized process to help someone get from point A to point B, and they have a reasonable expectation if mm-hmm. they do X, Y, Z that they're going to be able to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not subjective. It's very measurable, right, which is a very important thing for martial arts school owners to get. Also, what you described is what you're seeing in the attitude of the students is now they're learning how to set a goal
mm-hmm.
and overcome the obstacles it takes to be able to accomplish the goal. And really, if we're talking about, especially in the children's market,
mm-hmm.
it's extremely important for us to be focused on the outcomes of what a black belt are, not necessarily the technical skills, although that's extremely important. But what the parent really wants to see is that Johnny learned how to set a goal and accomplish the goal, that he learned how to be respectful, that he learned how to overcome obstacles along the way. And you articulated it very clearly. So what you've integrated into your very traditional jiu-jitsu curriculum is the ability to teach somebody how to set a long-term goal and break it down into short-term and intermediate goals. So that was how was that received by the student body? How was that received by the families and the parents and the students?
As you know, my current I do have a kids program that's kind of like in the beginning, but mm-hmm. my main clientele are adults. You know,
mm-hmm.
like I would say 17 and up,
mm-hmm.
and without exception. Every one of them, not only they accepted very well, but even the ones that in the beginning said that they didn't care about belt or rank,
mm-hmm.
they were the first ones to be there and do the whole thing. It's kind of funny because they say, oh, I don't care about rank. Oh, I don't care about belt, Carlos. That's okay and stuff. Well, I do the belt schedule and I do the belt testing. They're the first ones to jump in. You
sure.
know, so
sure.
a lot of times, you know, I think with the structure, you give the student the means to grow. You know, if they don't have a prospect of knowing where they're going to get, the incentive for them to become long-term members is diminished with time, you know. But there are other psychological things that take place during the class that I'd like to mention if we have a chance. That
absolutely.
I think, you know, you talked about, you know, you knowing what you have to do, you're doing, you know, setting a goal and accomplishing it. It's all a process. But, you know, like in a group, you have individuals that are more gifted than the others, or individuals that are more athletic, that have different abilities that they might learn faster certain things, you know. But usually the time frame for them to progress is the same. You know, for instance, what happens, like, I'm trying to bring up, without holding back the gifted students, like if I have gifted students in a class, a lot of times what happens in jiu-jitsu, if the instructor is not watchful, that guy will become not the bully, but he will become the one who has the pleasure of showing everybody else that he's superior,
right.
you know? And once that happens, those guys, I gradually weed them out of the regular group, and I set up an elite group just for people like that who can make up my competition team. And once they go back to the regular group, they're either assistant instructors, or even if they are not formally assistant instructors, their objective is to train, helping everybody else, not training, trying to show everybody else why they are the best. You know, that way it takes away that sense of the other students feeling inferior. They actually feel they have an ally. Every time you have somebody very good in the class, everybody else feels actually enhanced because instead of diminished, because they see that guy, will, in addition to the instructor, they're going to pull my level up. And the thing that happens, too, with the gifted student, as all instructors know, when you start teaching, you become a better martial artist because you keep reviewing and reinforcing knowledge that you already have. And in the end, even for those individuals who are gifted and are good competitors and things like that, they're going to get better in their martial arts one way or the other, you know, by acting that way. So it brings a lot of cohesion and harmony in the class. So there are certain things I do. For instance, a certain rule. You know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is based upon submissions. A lot of times the goal is to, you know, control and eventually put a submission hold on the person, and they keep going back and forth. If somebody in my class usually gets someone in a submission, the rule is with either at that time or shortly after, they have to teach the one that got caught what they did.
Yeah.
That way, when I come, I'll teach the counter. And so it's not, it's like the level is going to always be pushed higher because instead of submitting someone and the guy doesn't know what happened, you submit the person, the one that got submitted, instead of feeling frustrated or upset because he got submitted, he's happy because, oh, now I'm going to learn that move. You know, show me what you did. And the guy, you know, willingly shows you that. And then it's a lot easier from the instructor's point of view to teach a counter to something you already know than teach you how to counter something that you have no idea what it is. You know? So,
absolutely.
So psychologically and actually technically, it has given me a lot of results. And this is just one of the examples of things that I try to use to make sure that the classes are fun, they're enjoyable, and nobody feels that like they are in a win or lose situation, which is not the case. I want everybody to win. That's the ultimate goal.
Absolutely. And it is as important as that is for kids, it's equally as important for adults. You said something a little while ago that I think is right on the money, and we could probably expand on that. We always use the two characteristics, competent and confident. The first thing a student needs to feel is competency. They have to feel like they can do something.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I walked into the jiu-jitsu school, the worst thing in the world I could see probably immediately is two high-level black belts, you know, rolling together because I don't think I can do any of that stuff. But the best thing for me to see would be someone my size, my age, my body type doing the stuff that beginners do. And that makes it real to me, you know. And the second thing that has to happen is pretty early on into the phase, I have to learn to feel confident with what I'm doing. And I think what you said is exactly right. If you have a systemized curriculum and A plus B equals C, then I have something to, you know, sort of hang my hat on. I have the ability to say to myself, okay, if I learn X and if I learn Y, I'll be able to accomplish, you know, Z. And that's exactly what you described. I think it's a perfect example of how that can work in any style. It doesn't matter how eclectic or how traditional. That type of a process can work. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What do you do with a new student when they come in the door so that our listeners would understand how your system sort of works? What do you do initially to help them feel competent? And then what do you do in the first few lessons to make them feel confident with what they're learning?
All right. Well, the first step, of course, they do an introductory class. Usually I am the one or one of my senior instructors will conduct that class, an easy class, easy paced. And it's more like breaking the ice and explaining some concepts to the student. As you talk about sequence, we have like three different formulas when we teach the intro class. Most of the time it's the same class to everybody. But even if I have an experienced student joining the school, somebody that has some Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu background or high-ranked student or so on, I teach him the intro class. And it's kind of interesting what I'm going to tell right now because I had a challenge with that in the beginning. Let's assume you have a 7 o'clock, which is the appointment time where I teach my privates in the evening. Not my privates, I'm sorry, my intro classes. I can have from 1 to 10 guys showing up, you know, and a lot of times it's a range that goes from a guy that doesn't know anything, is out of shape, to another guy who's a purple belt, which is a high rank in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So how can I kind of teach everybody in a way that the class goes smooth, and everybody feels they got, the point of, you know, the whys and why nots of jiu-jitsu. For the high-ranked guy, he already knows what jiu-jitsu is from his previous experience, but he doesn't know what kind of experience he's going to have at my Brazilian jiu-jitsu school. That's why I need to have him doing the intro class. For the guy that doesn't know anything, I'm going to show him that despite the fact his lack of background, experience, and fitness, shape, whatever, he's going to be hanging in there with the whole group and be able to do everything that will be taught one way or the other. The only thing that changes is, let's assume I'm teaching you what the formula is, like a 3-4 move easy sequence that I do for a jiu-jitsu intro class. You know, a simple self-defense with a takedown, a follow-up on the ground where you control, position, and eventually do a submission. That's all. No more, no less. Very easy, very simple, very short and sweet. Now, for the purple belt, he already knows a lot of that stuff. So when it comes his time, I'll twist a little bit the complexity. Can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah, there's a little bit of noise, but I think we've got you.
Okay. For some reason, I have static. Is anybody doing anything? Okay, hold on. I thought it was on my end. Are you okay, Toby, out there?
Yeah, I think we can hear you. There's a little bit of static on your end, but I think it's all right.
Yeah, if for some reason it gets worse, I can call you right back and maybe change the thing.
Okay, yeah, that's great. I think we're good right now, but yeah, that'd be great.
So just to elaborate on this, what I do to make a long point, let's say I have a white belt, a guy no experience in a purple belt right here, and I teach the same skill to each, a mount scape. Let's assume that's what they were learning. I will teach the very basic mount scape to the guy who's the experienced guy, the white belt. And for the purple belt, who was in the intro class, he's going to learn the mount scape with a little detail here and there that will be satisfactory to his level without holding back anybody and without delaying the normal duration of the intro class, which is 30 minutes. You know, so, and those guys, and once I do that, I explain the formalities, the bowing, the how do you address each other, how do you address the attitude in the class. If there's a class on the background, I point out to every student and say, that gentleman there, he's a lawyer. The other gentleman there, he's a dentist. The other guy there has a construction company. They understand that there are people of all walks of life, you know, professionals. You know, my school is not just, young guys that are rat gyms. No, mostly professionals. So a lot of times when I get a guy who's a professional, which I do often, I want him to know that he's going to have an environment with people like him. It's not he's going to be, like you said, somebody that feels he's misplaced somehow. And we walk through the school. I show them I have a board with all the rules, you know, the 10 rules that we enforce. From hygiene to, attendance to, you know, how to talk to each other and, you know, whatever procedure we enforce, you know, in our school. Show the facility and everything, and then from that point on, they're equipped to go to the office and make a commitment if they're, you know, that's what our goal is. If we can, to get them enrolled on the day they come.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that sounds perfect. The way we've always described this from an overarching standpoint, and you had some great details, is that the primary responsibility of an instructor on day one, day two, let's say, you know, whichever, the first couple of experiences that a student has, and frankly, the first bunch of experiences up to the renewal point, is really to walk that student by the hand one step at a time. And I think you described that very eloquently in your system. So, you know, if I'm a listener on the phone, I really can't make an excuse. Well, my system is different. My style is different. My school is different. All of our goals are for that student to become a black belt long term, to be a student forever in you know, so many words. And our responsibility for that beginner student is to walk them by the hand through the process, teach them exactly what our expectations are, and show them how the process works. And you describe that, you know, very beautifully in a very eclectic style. So I think that'll be extremely valuable for everybody. Let's talk a little bit more. You sort of have a different mindset and a different approach than many I've heard in your part of the niche about who your customers are. And you alluded to it just a second ago. And in many, many mixed martial arts schools now in the country, they're focused on attracting the 17 to 25-year-old male market and teach them to be fighters. While you still have that huge component of your program, you've also integrated these other components, and you've appealed to a much broader market spectrum. Can you tell us a little bit about that? How did you come to think that way, and how have you made that transition? What has it done for you and your school and your business?
I can tell you, if you are an instructor and you have a couple of files, cabinets in your school, one, the students who are on the, and I'm not trying to be biased, by the way. I want to serve everybody.
Certainly.
I want whether you are age 17 or 55 or whatever. My goal is to change lives. I think martial arts is a tool. I want to change my students' lives for the better. I want it to be more focused, happier, you know. And there are several things we can talk about later on about the benefits, which I believe we both have an experience about it. But if you check your files, and I had an epiphany with that. You know, I was like, well, okay, let me see here how many students I have, how many students I had, which one left, who left and why. And you have students that start on a lower membership. They can afford to get into, let's say, your higher priced programs, and they tend to stay there, and they tend to quit more often than the ones that pay more right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, interesting. So if you pay more, that means you're going to stay longer. I kind of like came to that conclusion, but I was not convinced yet. So I kind of researched, and I saw that. And if I open my files, the files of the higher priced programs are the most full and more committed students. I have more students and more commitment on that file than I have on any of the other ones. And then you start to question why. Of course, if you don't have, and I know that I hate sometimes the fact that a student sometimes wants to train but does not have the means to pay for the class. Well, he will go for whatever the membership I can offer them. They can afford. But if you already start committing yourself to a higher program, the odds are you have a better paying job that affords you that expense. And the odds are, a few years down the road, you're going to still be with that same job that's going to provide you enough income that you're going to be able to still pay for the more expensive program. So this is what I found out. The more you pay, the longer you stay.
Yeah, absolutely. And in our language, the way that we've always described this is, in almost all cases, now there are some exceptions, and we probably don't have time to talk about that today, but in almost all cases, price determines perception of value. And you identified a couple of the demographic constraints that makes that true. But let's put it in these terms as well. Do you have a certain perception of the value of, like, a Yugo, you know, the car, the little teeny little car, right? Well, of course you do. And do you have a perception of the value of, like, the 500 E-Class Mercedes? Well, yes, you do. Now, is the Mercedes a 10 times better car? Well, not really. I mean, it's still going to drive about the same way. It's going to be a little smoother and a little quieter and have a few more features. But frankly, it's an engine and it's tires and it's a rear end and it's, you know, body parts, right? So the reason that we perceive the Mercedes is so much more valuable is in some measure due to the price, due to the fact that it costs more. I had to think about it more. I had to put more money aside. I had to write a bigger check when I bought it. Therefore, I'm going to put it in a higher category in my thinking. So if I go to XYZ Karate School down the street and I'm paying $30 a month, my perception of the value of their service is $30 a month. Now, if I go to your school and I pay $230 a month, my perception of the value of that is much, much higher. I'm going to make sure I'm there. I'm going to make sure I don't miss a class. I'm going to make sure if I'm paying for it, I'm going to make sure Johnny goes, right? And those are just a few of the reasons of what you said. And in almost all cases, price determines perception of value. And if you undercharge, you're doing what you said you found in your files. You're hamstringing your own retention rate. You're also severely handicapping your ability to have long-term success with your students because, frankly, if they don't perceive it to be valuable, then it's okay if they don't go, and it's okay if they don't progress to the next level. And if they don't perceive it's valuable, then they don't really care if they're learning anything, right? So that was extremely important for all the listeners to understand is in most cases, price determines perception of value, and also you need to keep that door open for long-term longevity in your students. So that's exactly right. What's that?
I was going to say, Toby, if I could interject on that point, too. When I first became a coaching student of Master Oliver before becoming a Mile High School, I had more of a MMA-style program, and we kind of catered to that market. And what you have is you have, you know, a testosterone-based, ego-driven class, and it's about did I submit somebody, did I knock somebody out, and it's about the top dog. And it kind of, as Carlos alluded to, it kind of, if somebody walked in that was a middle-aged person that was there for stress management, you would completely push them out the door. And I can tell you from my personal experience that as soon as I switched that mindset that I didn't need those people and went to a more professional class, I immediately got that person that could afford more money. And, you know, in hindsight, it was fun, but it was a lot challenging because those guys don't last more than 6 or 8 weeks. And then they move on, and then the first guy that comes in like that, they immediately want to fight on day one. And if you have a family come in, they're never going to sign up because they're going to see somebody trying to knock somebody's head off. And jiu-jitsu, as Carlos explained, is a, you know, about technique and leverage and, you know, training your whole body, not just about beating someone.
Yeah, and what you described right there is exactly the same curve of thinking that even in a traditional martial arts style, let's say, you know, taekwondo, they still have to go through that acknowledgement, because in any school, regardless of what the style is, regardless of what your sport is, regardless if it's dance, gymnastics, high school basketball, whatever it is, in any group of people, you're always going to have 20% of the people who are about twice as efficient as the other 80%. Mm-hmm. And you'll have about 5% of the people who are all-stars, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a school that only accepts the all-stars, or that only teaches the all-stars, or that focuses all of your energy on the all-stars, then you're limiting the market approach. You're limiting your market penetration dramatically. Now, Carlos, I'd love to hear a little bit more about this. What do you do in your school to facilitate the growth of the top end, of the guys who are really, really athletically inclined, who are quick learners, who are easy to teach? What do you do with them as opposed to the guys that are more challenging?
Right, those guys are how would I put it, in the propaganda department.
Uh-huh.
I make a competition team, and they're the students' face out there if I go for tournaments. I put my top guns to do the job, you know, and show, you know, the martial arts skills that we provide in a venue where I think they will excel and push themselves, you know, to their limits. Now, those students, when they come back to the academy, though, they are a reason for everybody else to be proud. All the other students who are not in that category, they are proud for the fact that those students belong to our team. It's a team, you know, environment. And they are also happy, from what I told you earlier on, that they have somebody like that on their side. Because when it comes to a regular group class, those competitors are either assisting me in the class, or even if they are doing the class, they are more there helping more than trying to beat up everybody. You know what I'm saying? They become the animals if I put them together into a competition training, but not on a regular class training, which is geared, like you said, towards the professionals, the ones that want to feel they're capable of, and they don't feel they're misplaced for the fact that they have a star next to them.
Absolutely. I think that's...
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I think that's brilliant. Did you want to expand on that?
You're talking about me or Alan, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, you.
Me? The other thing about the professionals, going back to what you're saying, you're not being repetitive, people talk about the economy nowadays, the economy, the slump, house market, this and that. What better way to ensure that your martial arts school will do fine if you have a student base predominantly of people in the professionals category? Because even if there's a recession or anything like that, it'll take much longer to affect dramatically the students on that income bracket than it would the ones on the lower bracket who probably are out of job or struggling right now, as it is. So, that was the point I wanted to make. Besides, I know the value perception and the commitment, it's a socio-economical thing. If I have money, more money, and I'm not saying that money is everything, but money is what determines the level of success we can accomplish in a business. If you don't make the money that you're capable of, like you said, you're cutting yourself short. Catering just to the guys who want to be in the MMA fights, I think it's a great career, it's a great market, but if you want to be a manager and make money out of their purses and get involved with organizations which are MMA and do shows of MMA, then I think you have a venue to make more money with the MMA. But if you want to cater to a class for professionals, you can't base the class upon, the stars, like you said, the ones that are going to be the Ultimate Fighter champions.
Yeah, absolutely right. Let me ask you a couple more questions, and then I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. It's been fantastic.
Thank you.
How do you, in a traditional martial arts school, it's been a huge topic for NATMA for a very long time, to bring martial arts school operators to the mindset of communicating benefits rather than features. And in almost every marketing problem that a member brings to us, in the majority of the cases, and probably like 95% of the cases, their ad or their commercial or their flyer or whatever it is, or their script when they talk to a person on the telephone, in most of the cases that they're making the mistake is that they're talking about features. They're talking about, Johnny's going to love martial arts because he's going to get to kick and punch, and he could maybe be on the demonstration team, and he gets to break boards, and he gets to, swing the stick, and he gets to do the long staff. And they forget that parents really don't care. They forget that what parents and in almost all cases a buyer really wants is the benefit, not the feature. When you're selling electric drills, you really don't have to sell the drill. The person doesn't really want a drill. They want a hole. They want what the drill will do for them, right? And you have a really unique approach to this in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu field of communicating those benefits to your students through the features in the class and making a specific, emphasis on the benefit. And could you expand on that a little bit? How are you bringing that to the Jiu-Jitsu students, and what's the reception been like on that, and what's that done for the school?
All right. Earlier on, you were asking me about the steps it takes for somebody, once they want to become a student in my school. I explained to you the intro class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't follow up on when they start training, they cannot submit each other. They follow a program very gradual where they build themselves up in sequences. They learn the sequences, and that's all they train throughout the class. I innovated a concept called controlled sparring, which you don't go 100%. That way you can, as you become more fit and more acquainted with the skills, you can increase the intensity without causing, any frustration or burning yourself out. But the steps you're asking me, is it right to somebody before they become a client, when I'm marketing to get a client, before they get to an intro class? Was that the question?
Yeah, or both, or how do you communicate those benefits while you're in the class, while you're in the school?
Yeah. Well, most of the people that call my academy, they already know what they want most of the time. I very seldom have a phone call of someone asking about martial arts in a general way. Every contact, every lead I get, they are already predetermined to go a step further. My point there is to facilitate how fast that can happen, and that's pretty much what has happened. Like my internal referral is a major part of how I get students, because I try to, for instance, we have a calendar which we're trying to implement more joint activities within the group of the school. Let's say they have an UFC party on a restaurant in a couple of weeks. So we go there, and the rule is each one has to bring a friend, you know. So they have to bring the friend. The friend comes, participates in that environment, sees that everything is friendly, is enticing, and then he receives a pass to come and try a class. The other thing is, like, when you have a referral and the student gives you a number for you to call and invite the person using the student's name as a reference and stuff, it is successful to an extent. But right now I'm doing one step further. The student himself is going to bring the friend. You know, when we have Friends Day, and try to kind of, it kind of breaks the barriers. You know, the person who is coming, somebody that walks into a martial arts school, I'm sure that they're going to have a lot of question marks in their head and a lot of hesitations. Is this place a place for tough guys? I don't feel, most of the time they're insecure. Man, if they haven't done martial arts, I have strong reason to believe they probably have some insecurities on a physical level, you know. And so they're going to get into the lion's den, and then, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be eaten here. You know, that's not the case. You know, we're just going to let everybody know, even before they come to our academy, we're going to project our image so far out that we are a place for people to meet and socialize in a nice way and use martial arts as a tool to help each other, that we don't have to go through those struggles that people normally have, that a lot of times you miss out the opportunity of doing something that ultimately I believe, and you, I know you do as well, will change everybody else's lives. You know, we're in the business of changing lives. That's what my belief is. And I know when somebody, you know, makes a test and passes, and all the focus and dedication, you know, that is going to serve him when he's in a business challenge. He's going to have that focus. Or even if he's stressed out for a reason or another, I know that when he comes down to the school, he's going to do his practice, and when he walks out of it, he's going to be a new guy. He walk back home and hug his wife and kiss his kid and be a happy man that day because he had that martial arts experience to close the deal. And it's not uncommon for students of different areas who are professional sometimes not to be happy with their jobs. You know how stressful things are, business deadlines, working for a boss and things like that. So a lot of them at one point in time confided to me and said, Carlos, I've had terrible days, and sometimes I don't even like my job. Before, I would just watch the clock, can't wait for the time to go by and finish this. But now I actually get anxious in a good way, can't wait to get done so I can go to my jiu-jitsu practice. You know, what else can you ask? My gosh, can you imagine if that gentleman or the lady didn't have that in their lives? How much more they will be missing, you know, not adding that experience to themselves, you know? And that's what I think the benefit, when you talk about benefit, this is what people have to understand. And I was talking to another gentleman a couple of days ago, very good businessman. We market sometimes to the wrong people. We think that we only have to market to people in the martial arts. That's not true. We got to get everybody out there who is not in the martial arts, because they have no clue how much more quality they can have into their lives if they incorporate the martial arts with it. You know? So,
absolutely right.
So that's the dilemma I was in. And so I didn't mention that to Alan or anybody, but I've got big changes that I'm trying to get done for starting January this year, where I'm going to just 100% concentrate on the business side of, you know, the market, you know. But anyhow, I'm kind of enthusiastic right now because you talked about
it. No, I thought it was brilliant. And you know, frankly, what tends to happen, and we've all been there, but what tends to happen is when you go and break rocks all day, right, which is whatever your job is, when you go and teach classes all day, when you go to the office and you sit behind the desk all day, when whatever it is that you do, what tends to happen is you get into kind of a little rut and you get into a routine, and unless you can sort of break out of that shell, you stop growing. And what it sounds like to me is you found Anthony Robbins says, when you're green, you grow, and when you're ripe, you rot. And if you ever stop learning, if you ever stop trying new things, if you ever stop to implement, if you ever stop trying to go out and get more information and go out and learn the things that maybe you don't know as well, then you stop growing and you rot. And what it sounds like to me is you've found new things to learn, and you found new ways to expand your life, and that shows in your passion. I think that's fantastic. And one of the things that, you know, we kind of want to, it was kind of a secret, but we want to kind of tell NAPMA members now, is that you're going to be doing some work with us at NAPMA. We're going to probably have you as a guest at our show and maybe some segments on our DVD and things like that. So we're really all excited about that. And I think that your passion for teaching and your passion for creating great students and for changing their life, I think will be a big benefit for all of our members. And also, myself and Master Oliver and you and our corporate team at Mile High Karate are going to be working a lot together, and you're bringing a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu component into our martial arts system as well, which we're really excited about. Tell us a little bit about that. What are some of your goals for helping us to develop high-quality black belts, not just only in a striking art, but in a grappling art as well?
All right. Well, I mentioned to Mr. Oliver, Mr. Allen has been exposed a little bit to the way I break down the techniques, the way I teach. It's kind of like building a foundation first, right? So once you build the foundation, which normally the way you do the drills, there are certain ways you can train jiu-jitsu that you can increase the speed and the retention of the skills. So once you start doing it, it becomes easier and easier, and it becomes faster and faster. It's kind of like crazy how it works. Because it takes a little bit of more time in the beginning, and I think, like, if you can rephrase the question again, I don't want to get lost. How can I help the students
We're doing a lot of work now cooperatively with you and with Mile High Karate.
Yes.
And you're bringing to the table for our students in Mile High Karate a very robust Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu curriculum. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's going to be their opportunity as a black belt to have something new and exciting that maybe they haven't done very much before, or have a new curriculum component that is eclectic and very exciting for them to get involved with. And we're really excited to have you facilitate a lot of that stuff with us. And that was just the question is how do you think that's going to unfold, and what are your goals for our guys, you know, who are black belts? What do you want to accomplish with them in the next, 24 months?
Well, I tell Mr. Oliver, I think our initial goal is to have every black belt on Mile High with an equivalency blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's a start. Okay,
mm-hmm.
The blue belt is a major stepping stone in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because once you become a blue belt, your road towards black belt is already set. You can advance with a lot more grasp, a lot more speed, and a lot more effectively, because you're gonna go through all the little things that you gotta get. It's like when you go to a college. And you're going to go to do your major, and a lot of times they put some, subjects that you got to get over. You know, you got those over in your first semester, you're clear to jump into what you really want to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the thing I believe is exciting is the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it blends with everything. You know, you never contradict. You make the curriculum even more appealing, more enthusiastic for everybody, because, you know, you have the sequences. You can do A, B, C, D. I teach in sequences, you know. It's not like you learn an isolated move here, an isolated move there, and then you cannot put them together. It's all about connecting the dots. And students will feel very fast how good they can get, not just in the karate system, but also in their BJJ. You know, it doesn't take that much time at all. And I guess also the fact they already have the martial arts background as it is in the mindset, that'll make them formidable students. I'm working here with the cream of the crop. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think these guys will be an experiment in that will prove to the martial arts world that we can have the best of both, a sound martial arts business with a wonderful martial arts with it, you know, program with it. So it's not like you're selling, you know, and I know that sometimes, you know, you have two things. You have a guy who has good martial arts skills and terrible business skills and vice versa. Here, I think Maha Karate is showing to the world, hey, this is what we got. You know, we teach you how to market. We teach you how to sell. But guess what? We teach you how to be the best martial artist out there, you know. So karate and jiu-jitsu, you know, you broke all the barriers. There's no, you know, you're not, I mean, what can I say? I mean, it has never been tried. I think this is history in the making. You know?
Absolutely, yeah. We're all very excited about it. And one thing that has always been a key component to long-term student retention past black belt is always having, you know, the next new thing. What's new and exciting for the student? What's new and exciting for the instructors to teach? And what's gonna continue to build core competencies past black belt? And that's why we're so excited about this. We think this is going to be fantastic for everybody. You know, let me ask one more thing, and then I really respect all your time today, and I'll let you go. We've got what we've learned over the years in Maha Karate and at NATMA is that an essential key component to any type of long-term business success, any type of long-term martial arts success, any type of long-term success in anything, is greatly determined by the people that you choose to surround yourself with. And we've got now at NATMA, we have a couple of different mastermind groups. We have an inner circle program, which is like 15 or 20 of the top owners in the industry. And then we have a peak performers group, who is about 40 or 50 of the top owners in the industry. And we regularly synergize in live meetings, and we bring everybody together electronically and physically to share ideas and grow with each other. How significant has that been in your history and in your past to be surrounded by people that you could learn from, that you could grow with, that could push you and pull you to the next level, and that you had the ability to synergize with? How valuable has that been to you, and could you give us a little bit of you know, background on that?
All right. I think that in my case, it has been more of a on the marketing and business, more limited and more recent than on the martial arts. On the martial arts, of course, I will always try to be surrounded. I have that belief, leave your ego at the door. You know, I'm there to grow. I want to grow. See, and whatever it takes for me to grow, I'll pay the price. You know, if it is to go on the mat, roll somebody, and get tapped out a bunch of times, but every time I get tapped out, I ask him, what did you do? How do I do? How do I be like you? See, if I have somebody above me, my question is not, oh, man, that guy is so much above me, I'd feel terrible. No, how can I be like you? Help me be like you, you know? And then the same approach in business. You know, I have somebody who has more success than me, and I ask him, I open my arms, I open my mind, I open my soul, I open my heart. I say, I have nothing to hide. You know, how can I be better at what I'm doing with what you know? You know, and then they gladly, you know, try to give you the insights that you can take, because a lot of times it's too much for you to digest, like food. You know, if you eat too much, you get sick. With knowledge, it's the same thing. If you're not ready for it, you got to take it by the stride, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. And as you get better at it, you can kind of, you know, I guess it relates to everything else. You know, you're a white belt in business. Eventually, you're going to grow into blue belt and then purple and eventually black belt in business. I told Mr. Oliver, I'm not sure if I told him, I said, he's got to make me a black belt in business, you know. I'll make a black belt in BJJ.
Yeah.
So, but what the fascinating thing is that when there is no ego, you know, and I think in all aspects, I think there's no room for walls. You know, everything is open, and you can nurture you know, each other. Like if you have a mastermind group, you know, the whole objective, I guess, is for everybody to grow. It's not like one person to grow at the expense of the other. You know, everybody is winning all the time. And I think this concept, it's extremely important, because I can't tell you how many people out there, sometimes they go through difficulties in life, not because they don't know, but because they don't have a support system of people that have been there already and know better than themselves and help them out so they can reach the next level. So I do have individuals in the martial arts, not many, that I have access to here and there. Mr. Clay Pittman, who's one of my students, one of my first black belts, he helps me out. I have a businessman of different areas, because a lot of times, too, it's not just the area that you're in, but the concepts that you have. You could be in a complete different business, but you apply those principles into your business, and you see results that will be also very good. So, you know, and so that's kind of like what I do. I like to read, you know, and listen to things. I wish I had a little bit more time to for my self-education, which I intend to set more aside. That's one in my calendar this year. Time for Carlos. I have like some days that nothing will happen other than me investing on the things I want to pursue. And kind of like, for instance, you're talking, and I'm not changing the subject, I'm trying to talk about me. I have all these things that happen to me. Like I'm on the cover of a Tap Out magazine. You are doing a story with me for the NAPMA publication. I'm going to be on the reality show Tuesday next week with the Ultimate Fighting Champion. On January 12th, I have a Hall of Fame nomination for Best Instructor in BJJ for the year. I don't even know which organization that is. And I have all these different things happening. I don't want that for my ego to say that I'm good, or, hey, look at me, I'm Carlos Machado, you know. No, I want to be able to be recognized so I can pull people under my influence, and I can show them something that I believe will help them out into their lives, you know. Because in the end, I guess there's that belief, if you're religious or not, in the end of your life, people doesn't ask you ultimately how much money you have, but how much good you made. You know what I'm saying? How many people you loved, you know, how much you transformed the world. And I think those things ultimately, you know, of course, the money, you need it and you have it, but everything else is like an eternal thing, you know? So.
Absolutely, yeah. That's extremely eloquently said. That was the poster I used to have hanging over my desk. I used to work in an office most days, and I had a poster hanging over my desk that said exactly the same thing. It says, on the day you die, nobody cares about the car you drove or the house that you lived in or the size of your bank account. All they'll remember is how you've affected them, you know, and how you've impacted their life. So I think that was extremely important. Carlos, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. I think all of our listeners will get a lot out of listening to you and a lot out of how you've implemented modern martial arts business practices into a very traditional jiu-jitsu school. And if you can do it in that market and in that type of a school, you can certainly do it in any. And I think you've done it masterfully. And we really look forward to working with you in the future, not only through NAPMA, but with Mile High Karate and personally. And I just can't thank you enough for your time today. I think it was fantastic.
Mr. Toby, it was an honor to talk to you, and I do appreciate also the opportunity. Rest assured that I'm very thankful for your time as well, and Mr. Allen. And Mr. Allen, I know you're there too. I can't thank you enough also for your friendship and support. And I know it was through you that I always got to meet Mr. Oliver and talk to Mr. Toby today. And I'm very grateful for your support and loyalty.
I appreciate that, and it's an honor to be a student of yours. And I mean, as NAPMA listeners should understand that if Mr. Machado can apply these principles as I've done in the jiu-jitsu community and now through Mile High, anybody can do it in any system, as Toby elaborated to. You know, change your beliefs, take advantage of all the programs that NAPMA has, and the future is whatever you choose to make it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. We'll speak to everybody soon.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Toby. Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Thank you. Thank you.